Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, July 19th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, record-breaking heat in the U.S., Europe, and particularly Britain today, and in this office. It's Joe Biden on the brink of declaring a climate emergency. Meanwhile, more horror stories of healthcare denied as abortion bans go into effect across the country. In West Virginia, a judge halts an abortion ban, probably just temporarily. Meanwhile, John Roberts okays Indiana's expedition bid to force physicians to notify parents of minors who are getting abortions. Joe Biden's polling is dismal. But oddly, 2022 Democratic candidates are surprisingly resilient. New report shows that the House added $58 billion to the 2022 current defense budget above and beyond the Pentagon request. COVID on the rise across the country, and there seems to be no response. Trump, former national security chief, will be one of the people testifying the primetime January 6th hearing Thursday night. Eight U.S. House offices have filed to unionize. And the story of Chad Meredith being dropped for a federal judgeship gets weirder and weirder. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. I am back after a brief thingamajiggy. Emma Vigeland held down the office yesterday. Thank you so much for doing that. And
No problem.
You're here today.
I am. That is also true. Yep. That is accurate.
There you go. We're both here today. Yesterday was a little bit tricky. COVID, camp, kids. I'm not going to say anymore.
Yeah, that's all.
Yep.
I was similarly vague, so it tracks.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this, that, you know, one of the things that added to the complications yesterday was that Saul does skateboards, and the kid landed a trick, which name I don't know, some type of ollie maybe. I'm
a
not
cool
sure. Is that
one.
What it was?
It's a cool trick.
What, it looked like he grinded a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a grind.
Yeah, he was on a, he did a little grind.
Yeah, now I remember.
Very impressive.
He we saw the video.
He did a grind and then face planted as if like his arms were completely non-existent. And so he's got a very cool looking fat lip and a little bit of bloody chin, but he's going to be okay. Aside from that, he's okay. All right, let's get into this. It is, we got a lot to talk about. There is happenings legislatively, but they are, we're really in small ball territory.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Manchin, we went through this last Friday with Ryan Grimm. And if you haven't seen the interview we did with Ryan Grimm, I found it fascinating. Very important lesson as to the dynamic that takes place with a guy like Joe Manchin. Really, I would imagine just about all elected officials to some degree or another. Joe Manchin, understand, there's very little leverage that anybody has with Joe Manchin. The more that he basically tells the Democrats, I'm going to destroy your legislative agenda, seemingly the higher his poll ratings are in West Virginia. Now, I haven't seen anything most recently, but
he's in the headlines. That's exactly what he wants.
He's in the headlines, but it's helping him.
And he gets to have a similar headline where he's an actionable character multiple times, multiple bites at the apple every time they come to him to sell the agenda. Every month he gets a new headline that's very similar.
Exactly. I mean, he keeps getting essentially the opportunity to hit a double or a triple, and he's like, it's almost like he's amazed, like, you letting me go to bat again? All right.
They got to walk him sometimes.
But the interesting thing that I found really interesting from the conversation we had with Ryan Grimm was this notion that Manchin was pushing this corporate tax rise, a hike from the Trump era. They had cut back, especially a provision on like what is known as pass-through entities. And apparently Manchin was not aware that a lot of businesses in West Virginia used that corporate structure. And he proposes this, and it's going to fund some climate change stuff. And Ryan suggests that maybe also Republicans went out to help sort of find potential complainers. Moneyed interests in West Virginia complained to him, probably people who have given him money in the past, big money, corporate donors. And so he pulls his own proposal off the table. And that dynamic, I think, is really important to understand. Because Joe Manchin, he is, I think, like, there's a lot of evidence that he's just horribly corrupt. Mm-hmm. There's another story from The Intercept about how he and his wife secured, like, funding for a conservation area just happened to be, like, in their backyard.
By their vacation
one of their
condos home. Yeah.
Or something. And we know the stories of his daughter and this and that. He's corrupt. Corrupt, I think, like, probably in the top quartile of corrupt in Congress, which is tough. There's very corrupt people there.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing to note is he has no ideology, I think, on some level. I don't think he has a particular, or to the extent that he has one, it is not as horrific as it might seem. He just has a bunch of corporate donors because he's a corrupt guy. And he does what they tell him. Period. End of story.
Because he listens to the donors from West Virginia that tell him to retract his own proposal. But anytime the rest of his party tries to get him to move an inch in their direction, he doesn't listen to them. And so you can see that it's one-sided, and that's just the corruption.
And maybe it is, you know, maybe he does have an ideology insofar as, like, I don't know what you would call, like, a corporate ideology or just a corrupt ideology. Or just, you know, I don't think he thinks too much about how society should work as much as what benefits me in any given moment is what I'm going to pursue.
And then when he does say something about society, it's usually like coded racism about why people shouldn't get the child tax credit because they'll spend it on drugs.
Right.
So that's an ideology.
Fair enough. 80s,
you know, racist conservative.
but things are so transactional with this guy.
Yeah.
And so it is fascinating to understand that it is no less frustrating, but it also points to a potential, not necessarily with him, but broadly speaking with other politicians, like, you know, you've just got to make the cost benefit analysis that these politicians are making You've got to change their cost-benefit analysis in this situation. And with Manchin, I don't know that there is a possibility for that. But for other politicians, there are. That is what we mean when we say trying to push politicians to the left. That involves a lot of, like, you know, people power beyond money and beyond votes, frankly. Because the votes are just happen on one day, but the directions that politicians take go on another. But with that said, here's a this is sort of like a Joe Manchin palate cleanser. C-SPAN caller Craig in D.C. calling in. Bless you.
Thank you.
Today, this morning, on C-SPAN's Pedro Echevarria. Am I pronouncing that right? This is the Washington Journal.
Washington, D.C. Hello.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I think Biden should run if his health allows him to. He's a good president. He's trying to do the best he can. If he don't run, we still got to vote Democrat because the Republicans are going to take us real bad. They already done got started. And I just want to really get this out there. Joe Manchin is a mole in the Democratic Party. He is a mole. He's an undercover Republican. Get him out.
Do you think he's the source of the president's problems or nothing connected to the president himself as far as his current polling numbers and the like? Oh, he hung up.
Yeah, he said everything he wanted to say there. And later in the program, we're going to talk about this dynamic. That caller expresses an interesting dynamic that's there. I mean, this one seems to be more appreciative of Joe Biden than a lot of people in the Democratic Party or just broadly speaking in the country. But this dynamic of, like, it doesn't matter what Joe Biden is doing. The Republicans are clearly, we understand what the Republicans' agenda are. And you're starting to see it reflect in the polling. And I suspect we're going to see it even more so in the fall. But we will talk more about that in a moment. And in a moment, we'll also talk about, I think, the reasons that are going to drive that, which is going to be which is Roe v. Wade. First, we got a couple of messages from sponsors today. Got a new sponsor. Have you tried the ZBiotics?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of our new sponsors is ZBiotics. ZBiotics. ZBiotics is a probiotic drink. It just comes in a little canister like this. And what it does, and this is interesting because I didn't know this. I assumed that the problem with drinking, the reason why you feel bad the next day, and I get news for you, it gets worse when you get older, is that you get dehydrated. But it's not that. There is like a toxin that is created in your gut with alcohol that makes you feel lousy the next day. And so what you do is you drink a bottle of ZBiotics before you have your first drink of alcohol.
Do we have it here? Because it's to say it's a bottle, it's almost misleading. It's very small.
It's very small.
It's like a
shot.
It's like a shot. You've used them all?
Yes. Yes. Well, I needed to try it out. And I tried it out many times, actually. And it is, I will talk about that in a minute. But it's super effective. One bottle is all you need. That's it for the night. Doesn't matter if you're going to have one drink or multiple drinks. You drink responsibly, you pace yourself, you get a good night's sleep. And the thing that happens is the next day is you feel fine.
Yeah.
You feel refreshed, ready to make the most of it. And here's, like I say, apparently what it does, this byproduct in your of alcohol builds up in your unprepared gut and causes you to feel bad the next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme, apparently is like the one that your liver uses, and it breaks down this byproduct. It is the first genetically engineered probiotic. It is created by altering the DNA of a natural probiotic bacteria that we eat all the time. ZBiotics is not vitamins. It's not plant-based extracts. It is not. There's no off-the-shelf ingredients here. It has been rigorously tested, and it is FDA compliant for safety. Okay, so you go out. I mean, I got to the point where, like, I could not have one drink without feeling it the next day. And I don't go out and drink during the week that much, but occasionally I will go over to my friend John's house, and it would be nice to be able to have a glass of bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't do that. Tried the Z-Biotics thing, and the next day, like, I feel good.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've read is that apparently people who drink work out. Like, there's a correlation between people who work. Now, I don't, I've started to do a little bit of exercise, not that much.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, like, people would not work out when they drink. This is like one of those things that feel good.
Well, I literally will schedule my workouts around if I'm going out to dinner with friends. Like, I know I'm not waking up at 6 a.m. to work out that next day because I don't have, I've only tried the Z-Biotic once, and it works really well for me, at least.
Well, but that's why a Z-Biotics is perfect for someone like yourself and perfect for someone like me, a little bit older. I can go. I drink the tiny little bottle before I drink anything. I can have a glass or two of liquor, and the next morning, I feel like completely like nothing happened. You can get 15% off your first order of Z-Biotics pre-alcohol probiotic. Go to zbiotics.com. That's zbiotics.com/majority. Use the code majority. It's the letter Z, biotics.com/majority. Coupon code majority at checkout saves you 15%. Link, of course, will be in the podcast and YouTube description. And second sponsor of the day, a lot of people are traveling this summer. I'm going to go to the beach at the end of the summer, knock on wood. But there's a lot of people you run into, all these places. Hotel concierge, folks who are helping you with travel, wherever it is. You know, your travel is contingent upon the quality of the people that are helping you out. Outstanding talent, crucial for a successful business. I know that. And if you're hiring, you can find talent for roles like these and more at ZipRecruiter. When you try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter uses its powerful technology to find and match the right candidates with your job. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply. They've got a great user interface to organize all this stuff. They have a complete, ZipRecruiter does, a complete suite of tools that makes it super easy to filter and review all these applications. Plus, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. I've been remiss, but when I started to use ZipRecruiter, the best time to find people for your job is when you don't need somebody. So you go, you find candidates via their process, you review them, you get a sense of both what you're looking for and who might be out there. Do this on a regular basis, keep it refreshed. Somebody gives you 2-week notice, bingo, bango, you've got it right at your fingertips. So travel to this easy-to-remember web destination, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's where you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, it is the smartest way to hire. All right, let's get back into this. I want to talk about these stories because my hope is that we continue to hear about these stories. But for years, you would hear people talking about we can split the difference on abortion rights. We can, you know, it's not, you know, why are you saying women's health care or people who can get pregnant's health care? Instead of just abortion, because we can split this off, but you cannot. And all of those naysayers are now starting to appreciate it. There are story after story after story. Here's one. Where's that TV over there? We're seeing them all across the country right now.
Yeah.
And they're getting reported, but it's going to be tough because, as we mentioned with Ryan Grimm the other day, there is a huge dearth of local reporters in the country over the past 15 years, really the past 10. A lot of local reporting has just gone by the wayside. And these are stories that are going to be very hard to find, but for locally.
This reporter writes for The Advocate, but also NOLA News. So this happened in New Orleans.
All right. Well, we'll get there in a second.
Oh, sorry.
But here is, this is reported by the Dallas Morning News. Texas Medical Association apparently has done seen a study. They want regulators to step in because they're now seeing hospitals. And remember, Texas is out on the sort of the vanguard of this because they essentially had the first legal or allowed abortion ban in the country because the Supreme Court would not stop their so-called, you know, fetal heartbeat
bounty ban. System thing.
Yes, 6 weeks out. So the Texas Medical Association sent a letter to the Texas Medical Board, said it receiving complaints that hospitals, their administration, or lawyers may be prohibiting physicians from providing medically appropriate care to women with ectopic pregnancies and other complications. You don't deliver an ectopic pregnancy. Since last September, this is when that bill passed, there's a narrow exception in both laws, the Senate Bill 8 that empowers citizens to sue or aid and abet abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. But there is a confusion as to who qualifies. Fearing litigation, this is according to the Dallas Morning News, providers have delayed abortions until patients' conditions have become life-threatening. This is according to a paper authored by a Texas-based researchers and published in the New England Journal of Medicine. One in Central Texas allegedly told a physician not to treat an ectopic pregnancy until it ruptured, which puts the patient at serious risk. This is according to the letter. This is when a pregnancy, or I should say a fertilized egg, attaches outside of the uterus and is not viable. There are something like 40 to 50,000 ectopic pregnancies a year in this country. Two other hospitals are directing doctors to send pregnant patients home to expel the fetus when their water breaks too early instead of treating them at the hospital. In those instances, there's a huge risk of infection. There's more of these stories. AP writes about sexual assault survivors choosing sterilization she's ever attacked again, so she won't be forced to give birth to a rapist baby. They have a story about an obstetrician delaying inducing a miscarriage until a woman with severe pregnancy complications seems sick enough. And again, like, what is that? What constitutes sick enough? We talked in the past, lupus patients who need a drug that is also used for medically induced abortions, can't get their medication. Even in medical emergencies, writes the AP, doctors are sometimes declining immediate treatment. In the past week, an Ohio abortion clinic received calls from two women with ectopic pregnancies who said their doctors wouldn't treat them. Dr. Jessian Munoz, an OBGYN in San Antonio, Texas, said medical decisions used to be clear cut. It was like, if the mom's life is in danger, we must evacuate the uterus by whatever means that may be. Whether it's surgical or medical, that's the treatment. Now, he said, doctors whose patients develop pregnancy complications are struggling to determine whether a woman is, quote, sick enough to justify an abortion. Said he faced a predicament with a recent patient who started to miscarry and developed dangerous womb infection. The fetus still had sign of a heartbeat, however. So an immediate abortion, which was prior to that, the usual standard of care, would have been illegal under Texas law. We physically watched her get sicker and sicker until the fetal heartbeat stopped the next day, and then we could intervene. The patient, because they waited so long, developed complications, required surgery, lost multiple liters of blood, had to be put on a breathing machine. And he says because we were essentially 24 hours behind. This study, published in the American Journal of OBGYN, doctors at two Texas hospitals cited the cases of 28 women. Remember, this is in September. And God knows how many were turned away. 28 women less than 23 weeks pregnant who were treated for dangerous pregnancies. Doctor noted that all the women had recommended abortions delayed by 9 days because the fetal heart activity was detected. Of those, nearly 60% developed severe complications, nearly double the complications experienced by patients in other states who had immediate therapeutic abortions. Of 8 live births in the Texas cases, 7 died within hours. The 8th, born at 24 weeks, had severe complications, including brain bleeding, a heart defect, lung disease, intestinal and liver problems.
Hey, well, you know, if a mother dies or has major health complications because of a pregnancy, that's just God's will.
Yep.
That's really what they believe.
Without a doubt.
They believe it. The natural process of pregnancy has to play itself out, and you're not allowed to encumber that or alter that in any way. And if you are not a perfect earthly vessel, whether that be by your own immoral choice, if you're addicted to drugs or alcohol, or if it's just complicated and it doesn't, the pregnancy is complicated and your uterus is not hospitable, well, then you are not living up to your biological duty for God. So it's kind of okay if you have some health complications and lose a liter of blood or you die, because you are not.
God has cast.
You're not for
upon
this
me.
World. You're not, and you probably deserved it. You did something to probably deserve that, right?
God works in mysterious ways or very direct ways. Washington Post writes a couple of stories. Woman with a life-threatening ectopic pregnancy sought emergency care at the University of Michigan after a doctor in her home state basically said, "You got to get out of here," because the presence of any type of fetal heart activity made it too dangerous for the doctor to treat her. One Kansas City, Missouri hospital administrators temporarily required pharmacist approval before dispensing medications used to stop postpartum hemorrhages because they can also be used for abortion. That was also like that, you know, the lupus medicine. Methotrexate, I think it is.
It's one of those three.
In Wisconsin, woman bled for more than 10 days from an incomplete miscarriage after emergency room staff would not remove the fetal tissue. That's in 3 weeks, those cases. 3 weeks. 30% of pregnancies end in miscarriage. That's separate from the ectopic pregnancies. David Hackney, a specialist in high-risk pregnancies in Ohio, is like, with a patient with a heart disease, at what point in her pregnancy is she going to die? You don't want to reach those points where things are that clear. But they have to. And that puts, obviously, people at incredible risk.
It's part of why the, you know, I see some people saying that doctors need to step up in these situations. And even if the hospital lawyer is saying that this might violate the state laws, et cetera, that doctors still have to go through with this kind of care because it's the Hippocratic Oath. But I just don't think that's a realistic understanding of how institutions work at all. And if, frankly, there was a better message from nationally being screamed from the Democratic Party about what is going to be done and how doctors would be protected in some of these instances, and I understand the Medicare funding at the hospitals is one avenue they're going, but I don't think it's been very coherent, then maybe doctors would feel a little more emboldened to do this. But it's just, it's an individualistic, I think, proposed solution that does not reside in reality, given
Some will, but it's wrong.
But the hospital can't do that necessarily. The doctor needs the staff, needs all of those things in place in order to perform these procedures. So
doctors at a hospital are just not going to be able to do it. I mean, they're just not going to be able to get, like you say, they need a room. They need the staff. They're not going to be, it doesn't matter how brave they are and willing to go to jail.
And they could lose their license immediately. And I mean, like, so it's just not a fair position to put doctors in, that this is their livelihood as well. And if they're in hospitals, it's not like they're, I don't think they're making bank in the way that they would be in private practice either. So,
Here's a story from the New York Times. It was a woman named Amanda. I don't know if it's her real name, 35 years old, lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. She had a miscarriage in her first trimester of pregnancy. She went to a hospital. They don't name the hospital. They were very kind to her, left like a little card, a little bracelet, you know, saying, sorry, you went through this. 8 months later, she has another first trimester miscarriage. She went to the same hospital, Baylor Scott and White Medical Center, I guess, doubled over in pain, screaming as she passed a large blood clot. When she requested the exact same procedure that she had had, dilation and curettage, D&C, that's what they call the so-called partial birth abortion. The hospital told her no. She said they didn't mention the abortion law, but they sent her home with instructions to return only if she was bleeding so excessively that her blood filled the diaper more than once an hour. The hospital records that Amanda shared with the New York Times said that her embryo had no cardiac activity during that visit, and an ultrasound a week earlier, She reports having a lot of pain, and she appears distressed, the record said. This appears to be a miscarriage in process. This is according to the records that they took at the hospital. So once at home, she said she sat on the toilet, digging her fingernail marks into her wall from the pain. She moved to the bathtub, where she and her husband just basically watched her fill the bathtub water dark red blood. She was there for 48 hours. Same hospital. The only difference was that law that was passed. The hospital declined to discuss whether the abortion laws had any impact on their medical care. I mean, this is going to happen around the country for thousands upon thousands of women, children, people who can get pregnant. This is going to happen. And it really is just, I think it's incumbent upon everybody to make sure these stories are heard. Because the idea, again, of a federal ban on abortion, it's already out there. Did Ted Cruz say that the other day, too? There's somebody, I mean, it is out there now. And they're going for it.
But they'll obscure it until it's the 11th hour.
Of course.
They don't want that agenda known, because people don't want this. You made the point, but I just want to point out that they're also, this New Orleans reporter found that essentially that they're making this, they made a 16 weeks pregnant woman go through an entire labor process as well, delivering a fetus as she, you know, she describes the emotional trauma that she was experiencing. Then she had to deliver the placenta after and began hemorrhaging after, also lost close to a liter of blood.
This is a non-viable.
Non-viable. It was a 16-week-old fetus. But they are not able to perform the abortion because of the trigger ban that had gone into effect. And the trauma of delivering a dead baby is, let alone, you know, I mean, I've just heard those stories very far along, but also when it's just not even necessary here, when it's a 16-week-old pregnancy, it's completely avoidable with a routine procedure. But you have to. Look at what you did. Look at your shame. Acknowledge your shame for not being a decent creation of God. That is a visual representation of your shame, that fetus, and the pain that you have to go through is the punishment that you get for not being able to deliver that baby. That's really it, too. They it's like this bizarre natural selection perspective that they have.
There are consequences.
Yeah.
Consequences for your action.
You must have done something wrong.
Well, that's what bugs me, too, about...
Mike's not on.
That's what bugs me, too, about a few of the... there have been some people on Twitter, you know, pro-life activists or, officials who have...
Jim Harbaugh.
Who have basically been like, you know, some of these, I think, instances are a result of, like, the left or pro-choice activists, like, obscuring the actual provisions of the law, like, making it more muddy than it actually has to be. For me, it's just, like, you got everything you wanted. Like, at least own up to the fact that this is the effects of it. The audacity of certain people on the right still blaming the left or blaming pro-choice activists for like, oh, well, they're kind of obscuring what the law is actually supposed to be doing. So women actually don't really know what care they're still eligible for. That's like the most specious, absurd argument to me. This is the impact. This is what is supposed to be happening. Just be okay with it then.
Well, of course, like, you have hospitals turning people away and you have we played that clip the other day. I can't remember what organization that woman was from, some forced pregnancy organization. And she was saying, well, it's not an abortion if it falls under one of the exceptions. Well, excuse me? Do you know what they call miscarriages? The medical term for miscarriages is spontaneous abortion. Like, they don't believe in medicine or science enough to accept the terminology that exists. It's not an abortion if God is okay with it as translated through us. That's what they're saying. That it doesn't count, because what they're saying is we're punishing you for a sin. Mm-hmm. That's it. The word abortion to them means sin. And they get to decide, because they are the theocrats, what constitutes a sin for all of us.
Or what constitutes something not being a sin for that abortion to not be an abortion,
well,
and
exactly.
Thus be okay. And like that bar for them is really, really goddamn low. Because, or high, I guess I should say, to clear the not being a sin thing. Because only in the instance of the 10-year-old being clearly raped by a 27-year-old man does that count. If you are a girl that's maybe a little bit older, well, you know, maybe you were asking for it. I don't really know the circumstances of the situation. And we'll say that we have a rape or incest exemption, but there's no way for you to really prove that in time for you to get an abortion. A rape trial takes a long time, let alone the fact that rape is one of the least solvable crimes in the United States. Cops don't pursue it. Rape kids don't get examined. Like, if you want to make that your emphasis in addition, at least it's, like, somewhat consistent, but of course that's not really what it is. They want to make a subjective determination about whether or not you were asking for it or not. And then, if you weren't, if it's an egregious case like the 10-year-old, okay, maybe we'll let this one slide. You get a pass here. God's given you a get-out-of-jail-free card, almost literally. But in most instances, you know, God kind of figures it out. He doesn't really have a lot of unforced errors, that guy.
And
we know what he wants. You don't get it. Godless heathens.
And to be clear, like, they're not even necessarily giving that 10-year-old a break.
No.
I don't know if you can adopt a child when you're 11. Can you adopt a child when you're 11?
Pretty sure no.
What about 12 or 13 or 14? Can you adopt a child? Can you be a mother? Can you adopt a child in that instance?
No, but you're supposed to give the child up for adoption.
Can a 14-year-old boy adopt a child? I mean, No, but if we're saying that you can be a mother at age 10, we're saying that you can be a mother at age 13, 14. Obviously, you can be a father. Are you going to let 14-year-old boys adopt children?
They can't even see a rated R movie.
I mean, give me a break. It's insanity. And, you know, the important thing is hopefully this, our press will not get tired of these stories. They're important to understand what's going on in our society. And certainly the reason why you have these forced pregnancy activists, these theocrats who want to downplay and make, you know, and claim that these exceptions and are functional in some way is because they don't want these stories out there, because the majority of people in this country do not want to live in a theocracy, do not want their personal choices to be dictated on the terms of some people's fundamentalist religion. That's it. That disregards what is a benefit to society, that disregards the concept of democracy, that disregards any of that. They are going by their interpretation of God's word, and they know they are right and you are wrong. And if you are doing something that runs afoul of their interpretation of what God wants, a fundamentalist, theocratic worldview, then you are wrong. And they will use government. That's what a theocracy is. They will use government to punish you. That's it. And they're not going to stop. I guess it was Ted Cruz who said the other day, actually, it was marriage equality.
Yes.
They're not going to stop with just forced pregnancies. Whatever their God has told them is the way that they should is the law that they should impose on other people. That's where they'll stop. You can look at the Taliban if you want, just to get a notion. That's where they'll stop, unless they're stopped before then. That's it. There's no breaks. There's no breaks on this, because they are doing in their mind God's will. God is the ultimate arbiter, and the rest of you can suck eggs. They are fundamentalist theocrats. None of it, this is not actually hard in many respects. It's just the tricky part is just figuring out which theocrat is going to have the power. And so figure out what their God's law says, or at least what they say their God's law is, and then you'll know where it ends. That's where it'll end. I know, what do you want to do? You want to touch on, there's not much that Joe Biden, headlined that Biden is looking to declare a climate emergency maybe this week, maybe next week. Joe Manchin, like we said earlier, has decided that climate's not so much of an issue, that we can't raise taxes on corporations, and so we're done with that. It is unclear what the president can do. There are some who think that he can do a decent amount. All that we've seen so far, halting crude oil exports, limit oil and gas drilling in federal waters, get FEMA to boost renewable energy sources. Maybe that means like charging stations around the country, or maybe it means, you know, helping solar farms or wind farms. Unclear what he can actually do. And then the Supreme Court is already sort of weighed in on what the executive branch can do.
They preemptively stopped Biden from even, you know, restoring some semblances of the Clean Air Act that Obama wanted in place.
Yeah. And so, and that, you know, that's an agency that is acting upon a statute. So it's unclear what Joe Biden can do in terms of executive actions. But my suggestion is, not that Joe Biden listens to this program or takes any of my suggestions, but they should throw everything they've got and make the Supreme Court basically rule that we cannot address climate change in that way. Let's get this over with. They have already gone. There's no reason to slow walk it. There's a reason why John Roberts wanted to slow walk that Roe v. Wade, because he's the only one there who understands the political implications of it or cares. He wanted to just slowly chip away at Roe v. Wade, drop the viability, take it down to 15 with Mississippi. Then maybe we'll address the Texas, or we just leave the Texas and that a blueprint for dropping it down to 6 weeks. But the theocrats on the Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett, literally signed an advertisement in the New York Times to encouraging forced pregnancies. They said, no, we're going for it. And that's where they're at.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that in the midst of this unprecedented heat wave in Europe, which has already killed over 1,000 people and counting, and we're seeing some really hot temperatures here in the United States as well, that Manchin kills it just at the same time. Like, it's just kind of poetic, is it not?
Yeah, there's some poetry associated with it. All right, let's take a break. We'll go into the fun half, and then we'll talk about some of this polling stuff. There's an interesting dynamic. I don't want to make too much of it, but it is interesting because Joe Biden's numbers are, if not historically low, they're dramatically low.
Historically low for a first term. Like, these are Bush-ish numbers. In the second year of his presidency.
In his second term of his pregnancy.
Not
pregnancy, his presidency.
Jesus. Second. Yes. No, his. It's similar to Bush's second term numbers in Biden's second year of his presidency.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying. Yes. Second term. Right. Exactly.
And his pregnancy.
And in pregnancy. But the generic ballot numbers are not nearly as bad. I mean, they're arguably, well, they're decent. And if you look into some specific races in terms of the Senate, they're actually encouraging. We will talk about that in the fun half. I mean, it's going to make the fun half slightly less depressing than normal. I think that's pretty good.
That's good.
We can hang our hat on that for the less solemn half.
Yeah, well.
Less solemn.
Who is this? Vermont Ben says, yeah, guys, I love the show, but holy cow, I am not having any fun. That's the second half. The fun half is going to be marginally
more fun.
Yeah.
The marginally more fun half.
Folks, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It is your support that makes this show possible. When you become a member, you not only help this show survive and thrive, you get the free half free of commercials. And then you get the fun half, which today is going to be somewhat marginally funner than the first half. So that's that. Check it out. Join the MajorityReport.com. Also, become a member of our Discord. We have over 6,000 people in the Discord now. Very vibrant community. You're looking for activism tips. You're looking for, running for local office tips. You're looking for just general chat, advice on stuff.
Yeah, there's a sports channel, a movie channel, music channel. You can, every topic you can discuss with, fellow.
If you want to share, Dave Rubin stories, whatever it is, check it out.
Make my job easier.
MajorityDiscord.com. We should have a channel for that, actually.
Yeah, like user clips? I mean, or
user
clips. Yeah, I'll see if I'll talk to the mods.
Yeah, we should do that. We should set that up. All right. 646-257-3920 is the number. We will see you in the fun half. Oh, and if you want to IM the show, pick up the app, majorityapp.com. It's free for both iOS and Android. See you there. Bye.